Hey, React Roundup fans. I wanted to really quickly talk about the sponsor of today's episode, me. I'm Jamin Holmgren, co-founder of Infinite Red, an occasional guest on React Roundup. We are a small but experienced team of 30 US-based React Native consultants. We've been around since 2015 and have a lot of experience in React Native going all the way back to the beginning. If you're looking for expert help building, optimizing, deploying, and supporting a React Native app, I'd love to chat. Just go to infinite.red/React Roundup. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Roundup podcast so that we can keep supporting the show. Now, back to the episode.
Curious about investing in crypto? Start with Grayscale. They have over a decade of experience managing crypto investment products, many of which are available right in your investment account. Search for a Grayscale product ticker today. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. For more information and important disclosures, visit grayscale.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I am your host today, Paige Niedringhaus, and I am joined by our panelists, TJ Van Tol.
Hey, everybody.
And Jack Harrington.
Hey there.
And our special guest today is Victory Nwani.
Hello, Paige.
Welcome, Victory. We're really happy to have you here with us. And if you'd like to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit about why you're famous, I think that would be a great place to start.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Basically, I'm Victory Nwani. I'm based in Africa. I work remotely with an IoT company in Austin, Texas called Ambionic. And we build an IoT application for fall detection. So it's used primarily in the healthcare line. And aside that, I'm also a technical author on Smashing Magazine, Log Rocket, Digital Ocean, and Hera. So I write for several organizations as a technical author. And I'm also interested in cloud engineering. So when I'm not working on the front-end side, I'm working as an architect in the Google Cloud and Azure. And yeah, that's pretty much about me.
Wow, that's wow. Plenty, I think. Yeah. You've got a lot going on.
Okay.
So I see that you have, like you said, you're an author for a lot of different awesome publications, but the one that we were interested in or that we came across most recently was integrating a dialogue flow agent into a React app. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that, and I'll link it for anybody in the podcast who wants to check it out later on.
Yeah. So that was actually a two-part article. So it focused on dialogue flow. I needed to use dialogue flow for a project, so I had to learn about it. And during the process, I also wrote that article on dialogue flow. So what it does is it basically explains what dialogue flow is. That's the first part of the article. And the second one talks about integrating dialogue flow into a React application. So we use like the standalone dialogue flow agent into a React application. So it's a two-part article, and I'd be glad to explain both of them.
Yeah, maybe you could start by explaining just what dialogue flow is, because I'm definitely unfamiliar.
Okay, so dialogue flow is a service offered on the Google Cloud, and it's what it does basically is to it makes building natural language processing applications much more easier. So rather than having to build the machine learning models, having to train everything on your own, what dialogue flow does is it gives you an opportunity to do this while leveraging the cloud. So you could basically build a natural language processing application straight up from your iPad. It all leverages the cloud for you.
So I'm curious, did you come across this for like a work purpose, or was this just, I'm curious what your use case was for diving into this?
So my use case was to build a food application. So we wanted to build a chat assistant for a food application. So it's one of the things which Dialogue Flow does. It helps you build chat assistants. So where you have chatbots like Siri, although Siri is quite complex, as we all know. But what it does is it helps you build chat assistants, chatbots, applications that can classify text and things like that. So that was what I needed to use it for. It was to be used for the chat assistant for a food software, whereby instead of having a human respond to chats, the chatbots would do that on behalf of a human.
That's very, very cool. So give me a little bit more about dialogue flow. Does it use like machine learning or some kind of artificial intelligence to drive it? Or how does it, if you say, I guess I'm looking for a recipe, or maybe I'm looking for a restaurant recommendation or something like that, how does it know what to respond with as a human might?
Okay, so I'd just like to say a little bit of a disclaimer. One of the things that dialogue flow does is it abstracts away the underlying complexity. So I cannot fully say I understand how it operates because it abstracts away that complexity from you. All it does is it gives you a service to use. But like you said, Dialogflow performs text classification, text extraction, intent classification, and speech recognition. So like you said, what it does in that scenario would be, it would be able to classify your text, knowing that page wants to buy something. It classifies your intent. You want to purchase something, and it responds back using a trained model.
Very cool. So your article is actually really nice, like end-to-end full stack system. I mean, you've got like the training or the agent definition of the Google Cloud stuff up front. Then you've got an Express server, you've got MobX, and you've got React up on top. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Yeah. So those are actually two parts split apart. First off is the Dialogflow application. And the second part is the front-end application. So Dialogflow is quite standalone, although it's offered through the Google Cloud. So to use Dialogflow, you need to have the Google Cloud project because it's one of the offerings of the Google Cloud. But there are other several ways you could use Dialogflow, basically. You could also use it through the Google Assistant. So you could deploy a Dialogflow application to the Google Assistant. We all know Siri. Siri is for iOS, while the Google Assistant is for Android devices. So you do not need to have like a front-end application to use Dialogflow. You could deploy it to the Google Assistant platform and use it via even a smartwatch.
Oh, nice. So if you have like the smart speaker or an Android phone that's got the assistant, you can actually integrate with that too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, no, it's a nice full stack system there. So if somebody wants to learn essentially what go from front end to full stack, this is actually a really nice demo application to walk through.
Yeah, exactly. And I wrote that in the second part of the article.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, why did you choose MobX? I know that's like a controversial choice in the React world.
MobX is just quite like a state management package for React. It's quite simpler than Redux. Like that argument is kind of age long. MobX brings in the object-oriented programming into state management, while Redux is more functional programming.
That's about the best synopsis I think I've ever heard about those two. I can never hone it down to that level. Yeah.
I've never actually used MobX or Flux or any of the other ones. I've only used Redux, although I've been hearing pretty good things about the new Redux toolkit, which I think is kind of Redux 2.0, that it's abstracting away a lot of the boilerplate and the things that people didn't particularly like about Redux. But I mean, that's cool. MobX is definitely still a good option. And I think there's another one that Facebook came out with, and now I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Yeah, I think that's the Context API. Am I correct?
Context is, I mean, that's definitely been a game changer, but there was a newer one, and now I can't think of the name of it. I'll have to look it up, that it seems like was, maybe it was Recoil.
Oh, yeah.
That was recent.
I think Recoil is quite new, although I wrote the article a while back. So I don't think there was a Context API when I wrote that article. I probably would have used the Context API though.
Well, Context API has been undocumented for a long time, and then it got formal finally. Mm-hmm. I think I can remember like 16, I think it got formal, and then React Hooks came in and got
I think really revolutionized using the Context API as a real solution. So Nwani or Victory, what kind of spurred you to learn about Dialogflow? Because this is a very cool API, but with all these cloud providers, with Amazon, with Google, with Azure even, there's so much that's hidden in all of the services that they offer. So how did you, I guess, find this and decide this is what I wanted to test out and see how it works?
Basically, when I needed this service, Dialogflow was kind of the most popular service. Although there are other services apart from Dialogflow, like the Watson Assistant from IBM. What made me go for Dialogflow was the simplicity and how easy it was to use. So I didn't have to learn the basic things because I'm not like a machine learning expert. I'm more of a front-end engineer. So it wasn't so difficult for me to pick up. And that was what made me use Dialogflow, basically.
Was the documentation for it pretty decent as well? Because that's always my thing, is I need to see working code examples, and then I can figure out how to put it into my own applications or my own code bases.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, this is offered by Google. Everything from Google is quite comprehensive in terms of the documentation. And it's also important to note that I think Google bought Dialogflow. They're not the original creators. I'm trying to search up the name, but it was originally called AI dot something. I can't remember the name now, but it was bought over by Google.
So I'm curious, and this is a little bit of a broader question, and I'm not sure a nice way to phrase this, but I'm curious if Dialog helps you build chatbots that are actually good. And I think the broader thing to me is, like, I feel like chatbots are one of the more underutilized things in software development, because I feel like there's an absolute enormous amount of potential there. But every time I personally go to use one, I hate it. I've yet to use one. And I'm seeing on the call here, Paige and Jack shaking their heads as well. Like, it's
so universal. Well, I avoid them at every
But it's so frustrating because they should be good, right? Like, this is 2021. Yes. We should have like the technology behind it. So I'm curious, Victory, like, have you had like positive experiences? Do you get like analytics from Dialogflow that tells you like how well this is performing? I'm just curious your thoughts on that topic.
Yeah, I would pretty much say yes, Dialogflow is quite good because, like you mentioned, monitoring. We have the Dialogflow console, which you can use to monitor statistics about your chatbot. So Dialogflow is basically offered in two editions. We have the ES edition and the CX edition. The ES is for quite small use cases, like small startups, while the ES is for larger use cases that are being used by larger startups and companies. But one of the things I really love about Dialogflow is the console itself. You can do basically a lot of things with the console. You can export a Dialogflow application. You can also import a Dialogflow application. So there are pretty much a lot of things you can do with Dialogflow. And it's quite difficult to answer when you said there are a lot of things that frustrate you about using chatbots, because I don't really know those pain points which you have with using chatbot providers.
Yeah, well, I'm more curious, like, how do you know, like, so, like, hypothetically, I'm building a food application, right? And I build a bunch of different chat conversations and dialogue flow. What would give me confidence that my users are actually using this thing and succeeding with it? Because I think a lot of people debating this, right? Like I said, there are tons of potential applications for this.
When we never settle for the world that's been built, that's when we drive it forward. At Cushman & Wakefield, better never settles.
Hay tres tipos de personas escuchando este anuncio de radio. Uno, gente que ni siquiera ha escuchado que estamos sirviendo un vaso de leche. Esas personas viven con prisa, sin tiempo para nada. Dos, aquellos que escuchan cómo servimos la leche y ya la están visualizando en su mente. Son personas capaces de desacelerar y poner atención al mundo que los rodea. Tres, aquellos que ya tienen antojo por un delicioso vaso de leche. Si tú eres una de ellas, este anuncio de Got Milk es para ti. Real enjoyment is back. Real is back. Got Milk?
You want to know that you aren't frustrating your users or your customers, that they're actually using this thing successfully. So I'm just curious, like, what sort of signals Dialogflow gives back that people are like successfully going through these things that you're creating?
So Dialogflow at the basic level, it gives you some level of observability and monitoring for you to know that these are the parts of your application being used all through the console. So after deploying your application, you can run tests yourself, or you can give an interval to know, to see the statistics coming from your application.
So, okay, walk me through this flow a little bit with this food app. So you're trying to sell wine, essentially.
Yep.
How does the agent know what wines are available? Like, or is that part of the service? Can I say, like, give me a good Pinot or something like that? Like, how does it actually, like, walk me through the whole, like, data flow here, just at a high level.
So at a high level, Dialogflow is broken down into entities. And like you mentioned, the first thing you would have to do would be to create intents. So your first intent would be, I want to buy wine.
Right.
The Dialogflow agent is going to be able to do some extraction from that text to know that this individual wants to purchase a wine. And there's going to be a keyword there. That keyword falls under a context. So it knows that this is the name of the wine. Funny enough, the demo application within the article is on a wine application. So if you put in the name of a wine, like, for example, the Malotte red wine, it has the ability to extract that name. So while training the chatbots, you provide in a very long list of names Then whenever a user enters that name, it has the ability to extract the name and know that this is the wine exactly the user wants to buy. Then it can respond back using a response that you have provided.
I see. So as part of the message that you get about the intent, like you get essentially a broken down thing that says, here's an event, it's a customer wants to buy a wine event, and here's the type of wine that they want to buy. And then you can go and respond to that.
Exactly.
Cool.
And they're also quite...
Sounded good there. I think we lost you.
Okay. Okay. I think, I broke off. So those things are, on a basic level, we can know them as keywords, but on the dialogue flow, they're known as entities. So dialogue flow extracts those entities from a single user statement. And these entities could include price. So you could say, I want to buy a red wine for $5. It's going to extract the $5 from that text and respond back with its own response. The entity could also be a name, but most of the times you provide those entities while you're training the agent. So there's a whole training process that goes on before deploying your agent for use. And that's where you define most of these things.
So to keep going with this example, so you create an intent, it says, okay, the person wants to buy wine for $5 or whatever the case may be. Presumably then you'd have a chance to wire that up to some sort of endpoint, because like you might have like a service that returns, here are the wines that we have for $5. So is there like some way to wire it up to a backend for that sort of thing?
Exactly. And that falls under fulfillment. So like I said, that dialogue flow is broken down into several entities. The same way within the object-oriented programming, could know them as objects. So that falls under the fulfillment entity. So the fulfillment allows you to call like a webhook. So you could have like a custom database of your own, whereby you have like a cloud function. So when that intent is being recognized, it calls your cloud function, which retrieves data from your database. So you say, I want a wine of $5. It sends $5 to the database and it retrieves a wine for that exact amount. So fulfillment allows you to give a better dynamic response to an intent, rather than just some hard-coded value.
Interesting. So you were saying that you need to train the models before you can really kind of let the chatbot loose into the world. How long did it take you to kind of train them up to get them good enough that they could interact with customers?
It took about 2 weeks, but this varies basically based on your use case, because you could have like a much more larger application. It would definitely take you much longer time to train. But I'd like to clarify that unlike where you're building a traditional machine learning application, it takes few seconds to train a chatbot. So basically it's almost instant at the click of a button. It takes few seconds when you click the train button and it all goes up. So what I'm trying to say is it doesn't take so much where you probably have to sit and wait for the entire application to get trained. Then you have to come back. It doesn't take that process with dialogue flow. It all leverages the cloud.
So then I'm curious then, what's the step that gets you this into a React application? So presumably you in your own app have to capture inputs, text, or maybe even like audio, voice audio. I'm not sure. So I'm curious about that. But then also like, does dialogue flow give you like some API, some like JavaScript thing you have to like NPM install to send requests to?
Yeah, so there are two major means to use Dialogue Flow. There's a REST API, which you could make use of there's a REST API with an endpoint for Dialogue Flow, but you have to authenticate with the API. There's also an NPM package which you can install, but there was like a drawback to the NPM package, which is it uses gRPC within. gRPC is not yet fully compliant with the browser. So I had to build a backend for the dialogue flow application. So you can only use gRPC within the node environment. But if you want to use it within the browser, you'd have to play around with Webpack, which I wasn't willing to do. So I had to use it from an Express application.
So building on TJ's question from before about how to check if this is actually doing the right thing for the customers. I mean, there's obviously sales data in this case, but how would you imagine testing this from like a unit test perspective, or just is there a way where, I've uploaded a new agent, let me just run a set of tests where it's like, let me just make sure that it's recommending the right wines to me again. How would you manage that?
I didn't actually make much research on that, because I don't really think there's a way you could unit test this, because it's more, like I said, there's a lot of abstraction from the underlying implementation. dialogue flow, what it gives you is basically the console. But gotcha. One of the things which you could write tests for are your integrations, basically.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. If you're doing like a full integration test, I suppose you could use their endpoints that say, if I send in this, then I expect this to come back, which I think would work.
Yeah, but that would mean you'd be running live API tests. But one thing to note is the API requires some form of authentication with a Google account.
Oh, for users, or well, for like one, like your like business or your personal account for running it?
Yeah, you would still need to use an authentication method.
Yeah, I mean, that could be doable. So one thing that I was curious about, and this is kind of a good segue into it, is how is the pricing for something like this, using this service, I guess?
Yeah, so the pricing for Dialogflow is quite low. And you can also use the pricing calculator on the Google Cloud. But I think for the ES version, which is majorly for small startups and small use cases, there's a high amount of calls. So each call you make is kind of metered. So there's an allocation of calls which you are given for free to use. I'm trying to pop up the pricing calculator. The pricing calculator is basically used for all services on the Google Cloud. So you could just check up the price, how long it's going to take you to run Dialogflow for probably a month.
Mm-hmm. But that's good to know. So if you were like kind of like you or like one of us getting started with it and you just wanted to try it out, see how it works, tinker with it, there is either practically no cost or a free amount that you can use just to get started and figure out if it's right for you.
Exactly. There's a very high free amount. Basically, when you create a new project on a Google Cloud, you get awarded with $300 to use for free. You could use that, and you could also use the free calls which is given to you. I'm trying to pop up that data exactly.
Excellent. Maybe we can link to that in the show notes, because that's always something that I'm curious about. Don't understand the pricing calculators a lot of times because it's fractions of a cent. So it's always helpful.
Yeah, but Emily, in the time where I played around with Dialogflow, I didn't get to pay for it.
They're usually pretty good about that sort of thing. This is a fantastic idea, by the way, for like a hackathon. If you work at an e-commerce company, I know Paige, you know, for example, like at Home Depot, this would be an awesome thing. Just, you know, it's hook this thing up to your product inventory. And the next thing you know, you're like, hey, I need a hammer. And it's like, yep, okay, great. And you're like, yep, okay, thanks. I'll take the drone or whatever, which is the hackathon project win.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
I think I got a link. So I'm just going to paste it in the message now.
Yeah. Yeah, this kind of thing, I'm sure Home Depot is doing stuff like this. I can't remember. There must be a chat bot somewhere, either on the website or maybe in the mobile app. But yeah, this would be very, very helpful, I'm sure, for customers, as well as having to have less people trying to staff that kind of thing at all times.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, exactly. And if you think about like Discord bots or Slack bots, I mean, the possibilities are endless for this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. In high demand for services.
Decisions.
Wait a minute. Are you still looking for cars on Carvana?
Yeah. Decisions.
When I use Carvana, I found the exact car I was looking for in minutes. Bought it on the spot.
Electric or full diesel? Decisions.
Come on, you've been at it for weeks. Just buy it already.
You're right. Crossover it is. Decisions decided.
Whether you know exactly what you want or like to take your time, buy your car the convenient way with Carvana.
Looking for an ideal place to start or scale your business? Come to Dubai, the new global powerhouse for innovation and business growth. With the Dubai Economic Agenda D33 Accelerating Success, entrepreneurs have easy access to flexible regulations, cutting-edge infrastructure, tax benefits, and 100% foreign ownership. Be a part of the future. Join the leaders of tomorrow in Dubai, where your innovation meets opportunity. Visit www.dubaibeyondpossible.com to know more.
That do not have a lot of manpower to handle customer care. So they could build a chatbot and they could use it for their customer care front. And one good thing to also note is we have Dialogflow templates. So if you as, let me say, Paige doesn't know much about Dialogflow, there are pre-built templates which you could make use of. You could just import it into your Dialogflow project and make use of it like that, without having to go deep into building yours.
That's excellent. I can see that being really useful for when you want to, I guess, give your, maybe your customer use or your customer agents, you know, they can just tell you like, these are the scripts that we typically use for helping our users, and somebody who's maybe not the technical developer or the lead on the team can just pop those in and get up and running with Dialogflow, which is awesome.
Yeah, because I think like...
Exactly.
Oh, because I was going to say, because I think like...
Yeah, I wanted to...
sorry. Go ahead, Nishri.
We keep bumping in. I just wanted to say it's actually a zip file. So after you build your Dialogflow application, you could choose to zip it and export it. And someone else could use that code and rebuild their own Dialogflow project.
Yeah, because I think like it's a tall ask for an individual like restaurant or small business to do this sort of thing, because they just don't have like a development team that's going to build and maintain this sort of thing. But I could totally see if there was some sort of like reusable template where you can just plug in small things, like if it's a scheduling thing, like put in your hours or something like that, to sort of make this sort of thing possible.
Yep.
Seems to me too that like the easiest way to input this is if you have some sort of flow where there's like clear input output, because I think like if people are going to be asking vague questions, I'm also curious what like error handling is like in Dialogflow, because I can almost guarantee you someone's going to use the like wine service and say something like, where's the bathrooms, or some other like nonsensical thing. So I'm presumably you have some way of telling people if the thing doesn't recognize like the user's intent at all.
Yeah, there's some form of handling. So which each intent you create, you have the opportunity to add fallback statements. So each intent gets a response. And whenever the statement to be used with the intent is not matched, you could fall back to a sentence. You could have just one or two sentences which you mark as fallback sentences. So whenever your intent is not matched, I could tell you, hey, Paige, I do not understand what you're saying. Can you say this? So through your fallback statements, you could even teach the user the right sentence to make, so they know that, yeah, this is what we could say that you would recognize.
So follow-up too, do you get like analytics or data on what people are saying? So like, because I could totally see it being useful if you're mailing a wine service and like you're getting a bunch of requests for some other type of drink, or maybe like people are keep saying the same slightly wrong thing that's causing the bot to screw up. So you could then like train it better. Do you get access to like that sort of data?
Yeah. So you get this dedicated analytics page, which shows you the various requests and all statistics for the entire Dialogflow application. So when you're going through the analytics page, you could see that these are the intents being matched. These are the ones that are not really being matched. So using the numbers, you could prioritize them, or you could know that these ones are not getting matched. So probably just are having a hard time matching these intents, and you could probably redesign it.
Cool.
Well, it's funny how we come back around to when we want to develop the service, it's like, oh yeah, we need all that data. But then when Amazon or Google with their home devices goes and collects diagnostic data from their, you know, speakers, we're all like, that's terrible. That's no, there's no privacy. Ah, you know, but when we need it, we're like, hey, we need the analytics. We need to know if it's working or not. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm just throwing that out there. There's no right point, but like, it's just funny.
I could see it though, because I think it depends on what you're building. Like for a wine app, it seems pretty innocuous and whatever. Sure. But if you're building like a medical application chatbot or a financial one, then I think all of a sudden you're really going to care about what exactly is getting stored and how this data is getting used. And your users are going to care about that too.
For sure. Exactly.
That's quite true, considering that you could have your Dialogflow application become very big. So each Dialogflow application can contain multiple intents. It could go as much as over 100 intents. So it'd be very, very useful. The analytics page is very useful in such scenarios to know what is being used, when it's being used, and how it's being used. So with that, you could know these are the intents that are being used by users, and these are the ones not being used. Because in most cases, you might not really have like a brand page to teach users how to make use of your application. So through those fallback sentences, you have the opportunity to teach the user. And whenever it's not being matched, you could use analytics to know that these ones are quite difficult for users to know how to use. And you could redesign everything.
Yeah. Do you know when Dialogflow is taking in user queries, Is it actually putting those back into its own models to get better at hopefully answering those questions? Or is it just like it goes to your application, it tries to figure out what you're looking for, and then that's where it ends? Do you know?
I would assume yes, because I would assume that over time it gets better and better as people use the application. But everything relies basically on your own provider training. So the more training models you provide, the more training you do, the more intent you have to cover edge cases, the better it gets.
Makes sense.
So to kind of hard steer this back to React for a second. So again, with the MobX thing. So I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who are like, Redux forever, you know, that kind of thing, because it's React Redux. And so can you give me a little bit more about like why the choice of MobX in this case, what the advantages are in MobX on this case, that kind of thing. So give some sense of why you chose it.
Personally, for me, I chose MobX because of the learning curve. Like we all know, everybody complains about Redux being quite hard to understand. And I was coming from a Java background. I was learning OOP at school. And when I picked up MobX, I realized, hey, you could apply object-oriented programming here. So I moved for MobX.
It's funny how many people complain about Redux. Like, oh my God, there's so much boilerplate. And then, you know, like they still use it. But, it, you know, Paige, to your point, yeah, Redux Toolkit is a great way to reduce that amount of boilerplate for sure. Killed the conversation on that one.
No, well, we can continue down the path of the React angle for it. I am curious how you captured input. Like, do you have like a little like chat dialogue thing that people are working with? Or are you giving like microphone access in your app? How are you sending data into Dialogflow?
So starting from Dialogflow supports both text and audio. So with the Express application in between both of them, the text first of all gets sent to the Express application, which in turn sends it to Dialogflow. So I was basically capturing both text and audio. So using the audio, I was using the browser API for recording users' audio. Then I would send that to the Express application, and it also sends it to Dialogflow. So there was this Express application in between both of them. And for the audio recording, I was basically using the browser API. I didn't really do anything much special about it.
Still kind of cool that you could send audio in, because then presumably you're not doing speech recognition on your side and letting Google handle all of that as well, which is kind of slick.
Exactly. It was one of the beautiful points of Dialogflow. You don't have to extract that text yourself. It automatically extracts the text for you and processes it, then gives you back a response based on your text. It's also important to note that you can also use Dialogflow in a regular HTML application. So it gives you this sort of iframe, which you can inject into a raw HTML file. So if you do not have like an SPA application, you could just inject in an iframe.
So wow, it does like everything.
Yeah. So wait, if it's an iframe, is it building in that situation? Is it building the UI for you as well?
Yeah. So it renders the Dialogflow agents within the iframe, although it's not really very customizable because people get to see the Dialogflow layout. But if you want to do more customization, you could then go ahead to build an SPA. But at a very basic level, you have the iframe, which you could just add the code to the HTML file. And when the request is made, it downloads the Dialogflow agents and shows it up.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you want just an off-the-shelf solution to do customer engagement, like a, you know, hey, click on this help button and you'll get some help. You know, just drop an iframe in your code and away you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that being extremely useful for, like you said, small businesses who are just trying to get a website up and running so they can do whatever it is that they actually want to focus on.
Yeah.
It would be really good is like drag and drop Twilio integration. So I could actually just like SMS this chatbot and be like, hey, I need more Pinot in my life. You know, and having the case shows up. Ba-doom. There you go.
Actually, that's a decent question. Are there other integrations that you can do? Like, because I know some of these chatbots will let you go to like Facebook Messenger and maybe SMS. I don't know. Are there other deployment options that it gives you?
Yeah, you have Facebook, WhatsApp, and iframe, then also using the API. So you could deploy directly to a Facebook Messenger and it gets shown up.
Yeah, because I could see like Facebook Messenger is an interesting one because I could see like it being nice for a small business to just have something to just monitor their the random people that message their business and just try to point them in the right direction.
Yeah, those are for small scale. The same way, I think on Messenger, we have quite a lot of chatbots on Messenger. So you could just add yours to that. But one of the deployment methods which I find very fascinating is the Google Assistant, because I got to try out the Google Assistant console while deploying this, and it's quite beautiful. We have a lot of Android devices out there in the market. So after building this, you could just deploy it straight up. And that gives you access to quite a very large customer base.
Do you need to, so what would that look like from an installation end? Is it like a custom extension? Like, what would the user need to do to, like, you're building the next great wine emporium, just a giant wine website. What do users have to do to get your wine extension into Google Assistant? And then with a follow-up, once they do, like, what words do they have to say to Google to actually trigger you? Because presumably Google needs some indicator that it's talking to your service and people aren't just saying, okay, give me directions to the store or whatever.
So basically, you start with using the chat assistant's name. So each and every chat assistant has a name. For the one within the application, I think I called it Zara. So you could start by saying, hello, Zara. Then it gives you its own greeting response, and you give it an intent and a response. So that triggers the chat.
So then presumably Google or Android then takes care of detecting like whatever wake word or whatever command that triggers your chat service so that it knows to like funnel these requests to you.
Yeah, it all starts with the name. You mentioned the name, that kind of starts the conversation. So on Dialogue Flow, you have the opportunity to create like a custom greeting, which is for you.
Well, if I was going to pick a wake word, it'd be like, wine! More wine!
it starts with the name.
Yes. And the name would be wine!
Exactly. You could give it that name.
That's great. Yeah, I got to say, kudos to you for picking an absolutely fantastic topic. I know you do a lot of technical writing, and I usually pick things like Pokemon and things like that. I will definitely have to think about picking wine in the future. It's a fantastic thing to talk about.
Yep.
Funny enough, I don't drink wine.
I don't either, but it's a great topic of conversation.
And it could be very applicable to actual businesses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Small scale retail business.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally.
Well, Victory, it has been a pleasure talking to you. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more, ask you any questions about any of this or anything else, where can they find you?
You could find me on Twitter, LinkedIn. You could send me an email, reach out to me. I'm basically everywhere. I'm gradually doing developer advocacy though. So yeah, I'm an advocate for a lot of technologies. So you could reach out to me anyway.
Excellent. Awesome. We will link to all of those in the show notes. And now it is time to move into our picks for the week. So Jack, would you like to start us off with a pick?
Sure. This week's pick for me is Resident Evil 8 Village. I'm playing this with my teenage daughter, and it is hilarious when, you know, I think we ran into this big mutant baby thing, of course, classic Resident Evil. And she was, you know, with the germs all dark, and she's like, ah, so it was priceless, absolutely priceless. So a great, fun thing, obviously not appropriate for everyone, but you know, for the right age range, it is hilariously fun.
Exactly. For the right audience, it's great.
Yes.
TJ, would you like to give us a pick?
So I'm going to pick a bidet, which is a sort of a fun pick, but we are redoing our bathroom, and we went on a trip to Europe a few years ago, and our hotel room had a bidet, which for our American visitors, bidets are not common in the US at all, but they're very common in Europe. And we had one in our hotel room. We liked it, and we were redoing our bathroom. So we're like, why not? And I'm instantly loving the decision. So we have a bidet from Toto. It's a Japanese company. They make a lot of bidets that they're like add-ons to toilets too. So you don't have to get like a custom-made. They make them that bolt onto existing toilets. So I'll link to one, but that we have. But really, anything from them should be good. I'm enjoying it.
Nice. Yeah, my husband grew up with one because he grew up outside of the US as well. And he got one recently for our toilet. Well, not recently, a couple of years ago now. Loves that thing. He is so, so much a fan. Yeah. And Toto is like the best. They're like the top brand.
Oh yeah, you'll pay a little bit of extra money for it, but I think it's worth it.
my wife, similar sort of thing, just absolutely loves the bidet.
Cool. So my pick for this week will be in the same video game line as you, Jack. I have been playing Mario Kart recently, and yeah, for the Nintendo Switch, and it is so much fun. So my husband and I will play it after work sometimes, and it's hours of enjoyment. So
yeah, that if you blue have a shell Switch, and Rainbow Road, just not fair. I was winning.
That's a lot of what you hear.
Yes, it's an awesome game.
Yeah, it's great, especially when you have a couple players. Oh. But yeah, we played that when we visited his brother out in San Diego a month and a half ago. We played it with him and his girlfriend and then had to end up in getting our own.
I can't wait until Mario Party comes out for the Switch. That's going to be awesome. Yeah. Similar sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Victory, do you have a pick that you'd like to recommend to us this week?
My pick is not something fun. So I noticed everyone's pick is quite fun. It's quite fun. But mine is a service on AWS, and it's called Code Deploy. And so what Code Deploy does, it automates your deployment. And I think this is a lifesaver and a pain saver for me. So I don't know how, what does it? It automatically deploys changes to your application running within compute services on AWS. So rather than going to manually redeploy a lot of compute services, you could set up Code Deploy, and on each change, it will redeploy it for you. And that's something that's, thank you, yeah. TJ has helped me with it. TJ, do you have experience working with Code Deploy?
No, I'm just really good at Googling things and putting them in the chat so they end up in the show notes fast.
That's beautiful. I'd recommend Code Deploy to everyone. It's a lifesaver.
And I'd also say, hey, we're engineers. Don't judge us. We might find AWS services fun. I mean.
Oh, yeah. A good CI/CD flow? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love it.
Especially when it saves you the time of manual deployments.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
It can be a big cost, though, I will say. Like, those costs can creep up on you. You know, if you end up like doing a lot of builds where it's like the CI/CD flow is lint checking for you, don't do that. Lint check before you push and CI/CD pings you.
That ends up as technical debt. It's not my money.
Right. As long as the company is paying for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're making money from it.
That's true. That's true. In comparison to your per hour cost, it is nothing. I just feel bad.
I do a little bit.
Well, awesome. Those sound like fantastic picks. And Victory, thank you again so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Paige.
It was wonderful having you.
I think I look forward to doing this another time with my video on.
Absolutely. Next time, yes. Video for sure.
And a better internet.
Thank you.
Right. All right. We will see everybody on the next episode of React Roundup.
Bye, everybody.